Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Yep, got Christmas behind us, New Year's in front of us here as far as the holiday season goes. And the new year brings, well, new ideas, new challenges. And we'll maybe kind of peer into whatever you want to call it, crystal ball. Those are very, very cloudy when we look at our future. We can look back, though, at 2025 and talk about some of the issues that were in front of us here. We had a lot of immigration issues. We had a lot of turmoil internationally as well. Some of that's been cleared up. There's a big fraud case out of Minnesota that's grabbing attention across the country. But there's a lot of things that still go underneath the radar. Wolf delisting still on the plate there. The courts kind of in their lane where they need to be. Drew Lozovsky from Yellowstone Strategies, political and grassroots consulting, from joining us today to look back at 2025 and look ahead at 2026 on Voices. Oh, Montana. Really happy to kind of get into these topics here. We look at Washington, D.C., and how they impact our West and our lives. There are things going on in Washington, D.C. that don't necessarily really have an impact, like the Epstein files, okay? I mean, that's an example of things that are just being used for political mud. There's things in there, too, that there's criminal activity. Right. But right now, the way the mainstream media is handling that, they're just letting the Democrats play Peyton Place with that thing. That's just a story that just irks me because, if I'm a mainstream media journalist, or if I'm if I'm just a regular journalist, I would say, hey, I'm done talking about what you think should be done with the Epstein files. Democrats, you had them for 4 years. That's not where I necessarily wanted to go, but it's a point to say there are things that matter and there are things that are noise out there as well. And we try to, the noise is fun. Okay. It's not like, there aren't things in there that are impactful. But we have to separate the noise from, what we can do things about here. And Drew Lozovsky is with us, and that's probably one of the things. Drew, good morning, sir. I hope you're well. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you. And it's Emmy and the young one. I don't have the name of the young one. Give me, it's Tom, right?
Henry.
Henry.
He goes by Hank.
That's nice. Is he a Hank, too?
Good morning to you as well, and yes, and happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year. And I am getting over a cold, so bear with me if I sound like I'm talking through my nose. Being around all the cousins this holiday season, I came out of my bunker and interacted with a few people, and lo and behold, I got a little sick. So.
Oh, Drew, that's good. Welcome to the human race again.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. What's your sense? I just ad lib something here about noise and what's not noise and what we have to pay attention to. Does the mainstream media have a clear picture of what's noise and what's not?
Well, sure, I think they do, Tom. I mean, okay. I think we got to back up to the 2016 campaign leading into 2020 during Trump's first administration, where every day was a crisis, every day there was a catastrophe, every day there was some new, now we know, bogus claims that were being made against President Trump at the time, his administration, his cabinet members, et cetera, et cetera. And the point was is that the media was really helping candidate Biden, soon to be President Biden, win his election under the auspice that if you elect me, peace and quiet, we'll be able to return back to normalcy. We'll be able to get on to the business of America. And of course, that's not what happened, but that's what we were being told. And it worked once, Tom, why wouldn't it work again? We are heading into a midterms. President Trump You know, we've only been a year into his term, not even a full year, really. And, you know, they're shooting arrows at the potential next presidential candidates. Could be J.D. Vance, could be Mark Rubio, could be Tom Scholz. We don't know yet. Anything's possible at this point. So, I think they have a game plan, and they're executing it.
Yeah, that for me is disheartening to hear that. Because we have trusted, but also look at the encouraging side of things. There is good journalism being done, and an example has come out where this Nick Shirley, an independent journalist, did a 42-minute video, and now that's like 100 million people have seen either that video or parts of it, and we still have got not a story out of this circumstance here. Out of the mainstream media for a lot of reasons. So I get.
And you're referring to the case in Minnesota, right? Where there's appears to be absolutely crushing fraud within the particular immigrant community, the Somali American community, that is, looks like they've been abusing different types of funds as much as $18 to $25 billion. I think they're being alleged now that's been fraudulently spent there under the watchful eye of Governor Tim Walz, who is, of course, the last vice presidential candidate under Kamala Harris and under her failed campaign.
Yeah.
It really brings to light just how easy it is if people are willing to lower their standards in order to game the system. And it's really unfortunate in Minnesota, and I hope this isn't true anywhere else. But apparently there has been some tremendous amounts of problems there. And I can imagine, Tom, it's only going to get worse. We're only learning about this now. And let's not forget, during Mitt Romney's campaign, when he was running against Barack Obama, the second term, we knew everything about Mitt Romney. We knew the kid he beat up. We knew about his dog being on the top of his car. We knew about the book full of females that he was looking at for different positions within his companies, and they blew that out of the atmosphere. And yet, here in Minnesota, we have tens of billions of dollars that apparently have been misused, misappropriated, and skimmed off the top, and not a single major news network on either side of the aisle is even reporting on it.
That's a real disservice to us.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And can you tell me why that is? I mean, I get that, you know, those mainstream misleadia organizations feel they're under attack and under threat, but they just bring this on themselves. If they would just listen to their own reports and read their own inflammatory language, I think they'd see why nobody trusts the media anymore.
Well, I think it's a multiple faceted
I suppose
problem, Tom. It goes from, you know, they don't want to disrupt their ongoing advertisers. They don't want to upset the apple cart with leadership up at the top level. Remember, all these people go to the same cocktail parties. They all read from the same script. They all get, you know, the AP's talking points every morning. They know what's going on. They just choose to ignore it. And that's the most insidious thing that the media can do, is to ignore an issue. It could be, I mean, we can speculate all day long. They're doing poll numbers and they see that it's not resonating with folks. But I think what it is doing is undermining what the purpose of the free press is there to do. And I read a quote the other day, Tom, that said, if a man doesn't have enemies, you know, what is he doing in life? The media isn't there to make friends. They're there to tell us the truth. They're there to tell us what's good, what's wrong, and how we as people can fix things and keep people accountable, elected officials accountable to the people, and vice versa. And when we see these kind of things happen, it's just disheartening.
Yeah, it's not a good development, and the relationship uh, is has soured in a lot of ways, and I think they could change that. I'm going to go back. Drew Lozovsky is with us again, managing partner, Yellowstone Strategies, represents clients, legislative, administrative. We'll get on some of these Western issues. You're kind of a champion of these Western values and rural interests as well in your work in Washington, D.C. I'm just going to kind of back up a little bit. Nick Shirley, he's a 23-year-old independent YouTube journalist. You can find him on X as well. Just to cut to the short of it here, he visited a series of these child care centers, meal program sites, housing services that were all receiving federal aid and state aid through various agencies in the Twin Cities area. And he walked into one area where there was a daycare, kind of two daycares. There was no children there, and there was not only that. I mean, there was supposed to be 102 children there in this daycare center. And this daycare center itself, as they reported, received like some $2 million from the state and from the feds. And so he went to knock on the door. Can I get a child in here? There were no children there. They would not open the door for him. And they were Somalian, and they just repeated things that I think they're told by their operatives in politics is claim harassment, claim racism, and don't talk to the media. And those things were all a part of that story. And so it's pretty revealing that had been going on forever and ever, and people are looking the other way in government to the tune of now they believe like $9 billion. There have been some arrests there and some convictions even overturned by a judge, but 72, I think, is the last number of people arrested or at least charged in those incidences. So that's just to kind of – that was new. I mean, he put that video out there and it exploded because of just the raw, journalism of it. These people, you could see them. They hardly spoke English. They would not cooperate with him. They would not answer the question, how can I get my son – I don't think he had a son, Joey, but maybe he did. I didn't see it all. How can I get my son Joey in here? No. We don't do that. No. You're a daycare center. No. Just trying to paint that picture for people who might not have seen that yet. And it really solidifies my mind, Drew, how wrong big government can be. These are the kinds of things that are examples that I think that happen. And J.D. Vance said it. Vice President J.D. Vance had noted that as well. These are the examples right. that happen. Does anything change over this? Where do you look into 2026? What happens to this circumstance?
Oh, I think you're going to see a lot of change. Yes, the fact that this is being revealed to us now is good. Remember, DOGE is still continuing yes. on in Washington D.C., not to the extent that it was, but under Elon Musk's helm there, they identified gazillions of dollars worth of waste, fraud, and abuse. And I wouldn't doubt that this was one of those programs that was also identified by DOGE. It will, I think the President Trump, within his ability, will use executive order to change the way Medicare, Medicaid funding is going out, potentially. You could also see a vote in the House, potentially in the Senate as well. But I caution you, Tom, we are moving into the midterms now. People are starting to pay attention, and politicians start to clam up. They don't like to do the hard things leading into a midterm because, they want to get reelected. They don't want to be controversial. So it's going to be interesting, but yes, I do think there will be some massive overhauls to those programs and how money is distributed through the state programs. Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because it's not just that program. There's a ton of programs out there, and $1 million here and $1 million there, and pretty soon we're talking about real money. Got to do something better. Sixth generation Montanan, however, calls Washington, D.C. home at the moment. Has worked for under two presidential administrations, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, U.S. Department of Education. Focused a lot on Western issues here as well. Managed some state campaigns and Ran some grassroots for federal candidates and ballot initiatives, and just loves it out west. And I appreciate you making your home in Washington, D.C., Drew. It's probably not your favorite place to live, but it gives us that chance to catch up with you and get the flavor of what's going on in D.C. How long are you going to live there? Let me ask you that. How long do you think you can live there?
Too darn long. That's what I'm going to say. One day, every day is too much.
Well,
D.C. is, Tom, I tell everybody that I immigrated here. D.C. is definitely a different place.
It is.
For sure. There's a lot of good things.
Yes.
But, at the same time, it's also has its colorful side.
There you go. we'll leave it at that. Biggest issue for you, like, what's on your plate when I called you up and said, "Hey, Drew, let's talk about stuff." What did you want to talk about?
Well, I one of the things that I want to talk about is, and this has been very impactful on the state of Montana since 1995. Anybody that's been here since then would remember when the U.S. Forest Service, BLM, and Department of Interior released 14 wolves into Yellowstone National Park because it was going to return the park back to its natural state, et cetera. And from that, we have seen an explosion of wolf populations across Montana, Idaho, Colorado, Wyoming. I mean, they are prevalent everywhere. Anybody that's in the livestock industry, in the hunting and fishing industry, we all know what wolves have done to those industries, et cetera. And just earlier this month, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Pet and Livestock Protection Act, Tom. And what that did was, it's a bill that would require the Secretary of Interior to reissue the 2020 federal rule that would remove the gray wolf from the Endangered Species Act so that states could properly manage wolves at an ecological and scientific level rather than from an emotional level behind a desk here in Washington, D.C. So what does that mean? That means that populations that were untouchable, say in Minnesota or Colorado or Wyoming or Idaho, even parts of Montana, the state would be able to manage those wolves at appropriate management levels. And this is something that the states have been vying for a very long time. And this is a good thing for Montana, and it's a good thing for the West. Now, we passed it in the House. Well, we're going to pass it in the Senate. That's to be seen. But if this is an issue that you are concerned about or want to get involved with, I suggest you call Senator Daines and Senator Sheehy directly, and I would encourage them to, support the effort in the Senate side. But that's a big deal. I mean, at the same time, Tom, we've seen Senator Daines come out and talk at length about delisting the grizzly bear as well. The grizzly in the great state of Montana has been an endangered species for a long time, and populations due to the efforts of the state, local communities, and the federal government, they have exploded. And that's a good thing. The Endangered Species Act is meant to help recover threatened and endangered species to a point where they can be removed and managed at an appropriate management level. But when you get on the endangered species list, it's not designed for you to stay there forever. That's not the goal. The goal is to recover that species and get them back. Wolves are by far recovered, and so is the grizzly. So those are two issues that I think you're going to see popping up in, with the Montana delegation in 2026.
Is there going to be numbers in Congress to move that? Because you're going to have, obviously, a lot of pushback from environmental organizations. They use this to raise funds off of and awareness and they give generously as well. It can be done in the House, right? Can it get by the Senate? Is it possible? Can they get 60 to end cloture on it?
Well, that's to be seen, right? We need 60 votes to get to pass. I believe it could potentially be if the bill is done in such a fashion that it will show those skeptical senators, particularly in Minnesota and Nevada, that management would be done appropriately and that this isn't an extermination bill. This is, where there's 500 and 600 and 800% too many wolves in an ecosystem. You can't have that many, top tier predators. They eat everything under the sun, and then you don't have anything else to visit or see or hunt or enjoy or come out and view. So I think if they can be educated that way, I think there is a possibility. We have an administration that is pushing for this, and they'll be leaning in very hard on that. So it'll be interesting to see how the Trump administration will help manage this through the Senate.
Has anything helped in the courts? I know that nothing definitive, but they've approached the topic of considering economic factors in delisting, and that's something that's void in the Endangered Species Act and EJA for that matter as well. I don't know if there's big movement in Congress toward that end, but it signals, I think, the public becoming more and more aware of, wolves and bears being used as tools for other agendas. I mean, what do you think? Are we onto it more?
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And anybody in the Intermountain West will remember the spotted owl fights. Where they tried and were somewhat successful to shut down basically logging across the Intermountain West. Mm-hmm. Under the Biden administration, with their BLM department, Bureau of Land Management, they were trying to shut down 11 Western states to oil and gas and coal exploration because of sage grouse. So these species have been used as a weapon in the past to slow, stop, and prevent, American energy development. And that's the wrong reason to put a species on the endangered species list. But you mentioned the Supreme Court, Tom, and one thing that they did, and it, every day is drinking from a fire hose in Washington, right?
Yeah.
From Monday to Friday, I mean, it's a totally different universe every day. But I think one of the cases that the Supreme Court did, and I think you will agree with this, is that they reined in the nationwide injunctions.
Yes.
So you can't have the district court, and the Ninth District Court, put an injunction across the entire United States. So this prevents groups from judge shopping. You can't have a judge in Florida put an injunction that stops delisting of wolves in Montana. Can't do it anymore. The Supreme Court said that's not possible. So that is a major rollback of court authority that the U.S. Supreme Court has done. And that was kind of didn't get as much headlines as it probably should have, Tom, but that is a major, major win for the administration and for the American people, too.
One of the things that we'll be talking about here going into 2026 and beyond, I'm sure, is health care in this country. It's a broken system. And a lot of folks just want to keep piling money into a broken system. We've got to have an honest discussion about reassessing and where's that money going to. And there are a lot of facts out there. We'll be talking about that. I want to get some facts out so we can have a facts-based conversation here because there's a lot of emotion when we talk about healthcare and the ACA, the Unaffordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as it's more commonly known. We'll put that on the plate here as well in just a little bit as we talk with Drew Lazowski, who is a managing partner at Yellowstone Strategies, and our gentleman, our Montanan in Washington, D.C., paroling the streets for us to keep us in touch. I appreciate that, Drew. Appreciate you you know, and I like how you present stuff as well, because anything is possible still in this country. Let me get Skip on the line here too, but even getting the wolf off of the Endangered Species Act, the list, that's possible in this country. So thanks for coming on and giving us some of that good juice. Let's take a call. Skip, listening in Hamilton, you wanted to pick up on that wolf discussion. Obviously, Hamilton is target zero for wolves. Yeah. Good morning, sir.
Hello, Tom. Thank you. And Drew, thanks for coming on. I've never met you, but I've heard about you. And in your talks, like today, you are exposing both sides of the coin so everybody can see exactly what's going on. I think that when you were talking about reintroduction, was it not when Max Baucus made a big deal out of it was kind of an enjoyable reminder when he was opening the cages over there or bringing the wolves and caging them over in Yellowstone to release them. One of my questions is, was that the right species? Was that a myth?
Right.
It was the wrong species? That was one of my questions. And the other one has to do with, if there's a delisting of any kind and control of things like the wolves, which we have a problem over here in Ravalli County. Most people don't even realize it, especially the southern end of the valley. They're overstocked with wolves for sure. I know some people in the FWP that keep me informed because I care about doing it right and making sure that there is attention to the word balance, and that we're just not going to use these species for economic gain and financial return by selling a lot of licenses. But I wanted to ask you, do you feel comfortable with the biologists in the state of Montana handling the situation and making determinations about how many animals to kill versus the federal government's biologists making the decisions? And thank you for all your information today, and thank you, Tom.
Yeah, Skip, good.
Yeah, Skip, those are great questions.
Yeah.
Just really quick there, Tom, and Skip, you're right. The wolf that was introduced into Yellowstone and to the lower 48 is not the indigenous species to the lower 48 states, right?
Right.
It's the Alaskan wolf, which is a bigger, heavier animal that's used to taking down moose and caribou, living in colder climates, being able to cover much greater distances, et cetera. And the wolf that was eradicated, ironically, by the United States government in Yellowstone and in Montana, it was a smaller wolf, the gray wolf. And so, yes, the interesting thing, Skip, about the Endangered Species Act is there's a clause in there that I'm paraphrasing now, so all the ESA attorneys, please don't call me, but it is they can approximate the species that has been endangered or threatened or is no longer in existence with something that is similar. And that's the clause that they used to introduce the bigger, more virile wolf into the Montana ecosystem. As for, do I trust the federal biologists versus the state of Montana biologists? I have to, full disclosure, one of my cousins, John Wasofsky, worked for a long time in the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and a lot of people have seen him on the show Wardens. He obviously is better looking than me, but talking with him and others, I trust the Montana folks with a caveat that there is ample amount of public input. Yeah, there has to be. This can't be done in Helena behind a desk. This has to be an open an ongoing process with community input, because the boots on the ground, people like yourself, I've hunted a lot in Ravalli County, particularly up in the Rubies. And, you're going to have somebody flown in from Denver or Washington, and they have no idea. They just look at this area on a map and think they know what they're
how this will affect. So I think there has to be a lot of community input. But yes, I think the state can do this well.
I appreciate that, and I'm with you on that as well. In fact, that's one of the tenets, is having a solid state plan before they're going to hand off management to the Wolves. And Montana absolutely has had a good plan, yeah, and Idaho as well. And they grouped Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming together, and Wyoming's plan went off the deep end. Maybe not for Wyoming, but it did for Montana. And I'm summarizing here as well, and that kind of delayed it too. So I appreciate that. Let's get a lot of eyes on this, and let's get a lot of people checking the facts about it. And we did not know until later on. And I think, you know, the Alaska wolf versus the timber wolf or whatever was more common, a much smaller wolf as well. I mean, that would have made a big difference in the discussion, I think, Drew. So we feel like these things are being forced on us, and we have not had enough participation, and that's on us. We've got to scream a little bit louder if we're going to be heard. How loud do we have to scream when it comes to getting a good discussion about health care? Troy Downing's going to be on tomorrow. The House passed a health care reform bill. We'll talk about the tenets of that. There have been a number of health care proposals out there over the years. Obamacare took them all off the plate and just mandated health insurance instead of health reform. We're finding cost overruns and a lot of misleading in the passage of that as well. How do we have a good straight-on discussion, fact-based, about fixing health care in America?
Well, I think it's just like the wolf issue. I think you have to talk it to death. I think you have to have lots of public meetings. You have to elected officials need to be open and frank, and they need to tell us what they're thinking and, of course, what they're hearing. And we need to be able to communicate with them as well. But the system really, in my opinion, when I did healthcare for the state of Nevada for a governor at that time, it was interesting. Just an example was we had the SNAP program at that time, and the state agency would call me weekly and really press the case that we needed to do, as the governor's office needed to do more to get into the school systems, because they could see that there were children and families that were qualifying for federal support, but were either ignoring it, refusing it, didn't know about it, didn't know they could access it, et cetera. And the state agency was seeing money that they were not able to access because they were not signing up enough people. And so money was being left on the table, in their opinion. I believe that was one of the tenets of the ACA, was as they made it mandatory, because people saw it as a handout in a lot of ways. And I think we have to be very careful to think about what exactly we're talking about. This is affordable care subsidy, right? Mm-hmm. The cost that me as a consumer is paying based upon my income and whatnot, let's say it's a number, $60 a month, and now I'm getting a new premium that's $900 a month. Of course, I'm making these numbers up, Tom. Mm-hmm. But the point is that my health care still always costs $900 a month. It's just the federal government and everybody else was subsidizing my monthly premium. Well, where did all that money go, Tom? All that money went basically directly into the pockets of the insurance companies. Of course they would love the ACA. This was a massive federal tax incentive for the insurance companies, where billions and billions of dollars could transfer directly into their coffers. And how much of that reaches down to the hospitals, the doctors, the assistants, et cetera? You know, we really need to break that down and see exactly how that is. And that's part of the discussion you're talking about. But I think what the Republicans have done in Congress is they are signaling, I don't think it's quite done yet, but they are signaling, why aren't we giving, and President Trump has said this, why aren't we giving the subsidy directly to the individual? Why are we giving it to the insurance company? Well, that's then
you know, red flags off in Washington like you've never seen before, because a lot of that money gets filtered back into state and local politics. So, you know, I think we have to shine a lot more sunlight on this issue before we're going to have an actual resolution.
And can we fix health care reform? I mean, some of those things out there, do we have to do away with Obamacare? I mean, and I appreciate your expertise in this as well, so I'm going to get into it a little bit. That's the question. Can we enhance it? Do we have to have separate packages? Do we have to do away with it?
Well, the issue is that you have a blanket law that has been edited, reformed, amendments added to it, areas stricken, words taken out, a word added here. In my opinion, if I was had the wand, I would strike the entire law and start over. Remember, this was forced upon the American people on Christmas Eve under Obamacare, where every single Democrat voted for it and not a single Republican did. That should tell people right there that this was not something that was supported or properly sold to the American people. I think they need to come together and they need to decide what is actually best for the citizens, not the insurance companies. So I would rewrite it.
Hopefully they can get that done too. I mean, I'm with you on that. I don't think it worked. And there's a lot of evidence that it didn't work as it was intended. Had a lot of bad consequences there too. Our rates have gone up. Healthcare costs have gone up. Nothing's been reformed here. Except the profits of insurance companies are pretty much guaranteed nowadays. I got to let you go. Give me something to finish on. What do you look forward to in 2026, even if it's personal? Give me something good to just sink my teeth into here for a Monday.
Well, I'm looking forward to, a new beginning in 2026. It will be the end of the 119th Congress. We're heading into the midterms. I think that America's on the upswing with our energy independence. I mean, the Trump administration has been doing massive lifting on coal, nuclear, oil and gas. And I think once you see those prices coming down, Tom, I think you're going to see inflation crashing down as well. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Good. I'm cheering that on too. I just think affordable energy makes our economy much, much more resilient. And the pullback on regulations have helped the internet. They've helped business in a lot of ways too around the world. Hey, Drew, let's catch up again, okay? Before too long.
Appreciate that, and we'll talk at you later, Tom.
Yeah, have a nice holiday season, you and the family, and get over. You sounded good, by the way. You must be on the upswing. You sounded just fine.
A lot of NyQuil, that's all I can say.
I hear you. All right, Drew, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.